I'm Landy, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
I want to thank Mark for asking me to come up here. I know he's at the State Line Convention, you know. It's just an honor and a privilege to come up and share with you guys and be here. And I really appreciate the High Desert speaker meeting and your big book study, and you know, I appreciate the group a lot. It's been a long time since I've been asked to speak up here. And last time you guys were over on Lancaster Boulevard, so that was a while ago. I think it was kind of there. Anyways, my sobriety date is April 7th, 2003. And I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. You know, when I call him, I don't say, you know, remember me? You know, he knows me. I'm accountable to him. I've never been accountable to anybody, but I'm accountable to this man. And that's helpful for me because early on they said, if you have an idea, you might want to share it with somebody before you act on it, Landy. So my home group is the AV Men Stag. It's been my home group for quite a while. And I'm just super grateful to be here. I didn't start drinking until I was 12. And I got my parents owned a restaurant bar. And I turned into a liar, cheat, and a thief right away because I stole alcohol out of their bar and hid it out in the desert in my fort, and stole some stale cigarettes out of the cigarette machine in the you know, they were stale, but I got to the fort. We had some candles out there and roof on it. Of course, all my buddies rode their Stingray bicycles out there. We had little cards tied to the spokes so it sounded cool, you know, and. We get in the drink in the desert, you know? Drink in the desert, hot beer and hot vodka and smoke stale cigarettes. And, you know, we were just cool. It was the thing to do. You know, and alcoholism is a progressive disease, and my drinking progressed into bars and stuff like that. You know, as a small child, I don't know why we went back out into the desert and drank hot beer and hot vodka, but, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm an alcoholic at a young age. I didn't have any idea I was alcoholic. I stayed in denial of being an alcoholic for a very long time. As I grew up, my father died of alcoholism when I was 18, and it was very hard, and to watch him, you know, drink himself to death. He was 58 years old. You know, it rocks your world, you know, when you grow up without your father. So I started a business, resented my mother. That's part of one of the requirements for being Alcoholics Anonymous, is to resent your parents. So I resented I didn't resent my father. I loved him and I missed him, but I did resent my mother. We'll get to that. So my disease progressed, and I started partying with friends and riding dirt bikes in the desert and drinking and thinking we were cool then. We used to ride down the Elk Valley Freeway before it was paved and, you know, fire up a few road graders while we were out there. And that's how I learned how to run a tractor. Just stupid stuff, you know, stupid stuff. And so I started a concrete business in 1981, got my contractor's license, and had a good business. I got married. We had two kids, and you know, we drank a lot. You know, water seeks its own level. You know, I have to have a partner that drinks like I drink. And she drank a lot, and I drank a lot, and she worked hard in the office, and I worked hard in the field, and things progressed. Things progressed where, you know, I started having some problems, getting a few drunk drivings. And it was the cop's fault. I really wasn't that far over on the line. You know, he was just picking on me. And it just started, you know, I had a great time drinking for quite a while. You know, not as much fun as Joe, but almost, you know. And when I when I finally got to the point where, you know, I was drinking immediately after work, you know, and I wouldn't make it home till late. And but I'd get up early the next morning and go to work because I'm a functioning alcoholic. You know, I always thought I was a functioning alcoholic. It's quite far from the truth, but at that time I was, you know, I don't have a problem with drinking. If you just leave me alone, I'll be okay. So the drinking got worse, and drinking in bars led to a DUI. And I got a DUI, and I got sentenced to driving school. You know, they had to, I don't know, it was 2 weeks of whatever they had me do, and then they're going there and talking about, you know, the driving school, the drunk driving school. We all, none of you guys probably done it, but I had to do it. So I did that, and I also, the judge gave me 10 AA meetings. And so I had 10 days left to do my 10 AA meetings, and I went to the open door. And I thought, this is, you know, so I had a few drinks before I went in there, because it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I know you guys are drinking there. It says alcohol in it. It's got to be drinking this. I don't have a drinking problem. I have a problem with the California Highway Patrol. And so I go into the open door, and I'm looking around, and I look over in the corner, and I see my friend Steve, you know, long-haired dude, rode a panhead. I knew him from Harley Davidson. You know, we were friends. And I went over and sat next to Steve. And Steve's, you know, I said, Steve, what are you doing here? And he said, Landy, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. And I slid my chair over a little bit, you know. It's like, I thought you were cool. I thought you were cool. Well, some girl was in there using a lot of bad language, talking that God took care of all her problems, and I have a big mouth, you know, and I told her, you don't use those words in God in the same thing. Well, I stirred a ruckus up in the open door, which I thought that's what you do there anyway, I heard. But anyway, so they asked me to leave, and I said, well, I got to get my report card signed. Sign it yourself, you know. So I had my secretary sign it, a couple of my guys in the field sign it, a few guys down at the bar signed it, and that was it for Alcoholics Anonymous for me. I don't really have a drinking problem, you know. So drinking, you know, got worse, more driving at the bars. And you know, when you got a DUI and they take away your license for 30 days, they make a big deal out of it. You got to get this special insurance and everything. It makes you kind of nervous when you're leaving the bar and you've been drinking after you've had one. You know, I have my work truck, and I just, you know, I don't want to get in. I don't like jail. It's not my thing. I'm not the guy that's done a bunch of time. I like to be free. You know, things just got way carried away, you know, because I'd go to work. I would come home in a tow truck because I need my car. You know, I was drinking and driving because how else are you going to get your car home, right? So I just took, I finally decided that I had to take my work truck home, and we were doing good. So I towed my car home, you know, I towed my truck home, you know, and the wife was mad, and she was drinking a lot. And apparently she was getting really sick. And the doctors had told her that if she didn't stop drinking, that it would kill her. You know, they didn't tell me that, but they told her that. And I kept on drinking, and you know, more problems. And I'm still working. And on October 7th, 2002, my wife passed away from alcoholism. You know, cirrhosis of the liver, and hypertension. And my son found her in bed. You know, it was really a bad thing. It didn't work well for me at all. I was so tied up in what I could have done and what I should have done, and remorse and guilt. And boy, did I start drinking. You know, I drank a lot. I drank an awful lot, and I found that I couldn't stop drinking. I was drinking only when I was awake. I would wake up in the middle of the night and drink. You know, in the morning when I went to work, I'm still a functioning alcoholic, you know, in my sick alcoholic mind. My son was really bad from finding his mother, and I was really afraid for him, and I started taking him to therapy. And so we went a few times, and then he says, "Dad, I'm okay, I don't want to go." And for some reason, I kept going. So I meet Rosemary Peterson at 10 a.m. and meet her in her office, and she says, "Landy, have you been drinking?" And I say, "Yeah." She says, "It's 10 in the morning." I said, "I start drinking at 5. She says, "Do you think you're alcoholic?" And I said, "Absolutely not, but I drink all the time." You know, that's the denial. You know, alcohol's not my problem. And so I'm out there, and I am giving it. I'm trying to put every drop of alcohol I can into my body. I'm trying, and some outside issues, you know, I did that too. I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's also 2024. But, you know, I could not kill the pain. Alcohol completely stopped working for me. It didn't work at all. And all I needed was one more drink and I'd be okay. Just one more drink and I'll be okay. And that was, that, you know, it was April 6, 2003. I'm at Lucky's Bar in Lake Hughes. I started drinking in that bar when I was 19 years old. And my foreman, Smitty, grabbed me out of the bar at 48 years old and told me, "Landy, you're out of control." And he took me all the way to the east side, to where I lived in Lancaster. He took me all the way there. And I begged him to stop at every bar between here. The rock store is a quarter of a mile. I'm beating on the dash. "Stop, I need a drink." We got out to the east side. I have a drink. I grab my bottle out of my kitchen. I'm drinking. I fall off the floor. I smash my face open some more. I'm a bloody mess. And I'd finished the bottle and crawl down the hall and crawl into my bed. And, you know, all I needed was one more drink and I'd be okay. You know, and it's like, whoa, you know. But anyways, I'm laying there wanting to die, not wanting to live anymore. Full of remorse, guilt, shame, you name it. I had it, you know, and this door opens up, and it was my wife. And she came to me, she sat with me, she held my hand. She said, "You don't have to die from drugs and alcohol." And she stayed with me a long time, and she got the washcloth and was cleaning my face. She went back into the bathroom and was wringing out the washcloth, and I called her name, and she wasn't there. So that was my spiritual experience. So in the morning when I came out, Smitty was laying on the couch. He said, "I was white as a ghost." And he said, what's going on? I said, "You wouldn't believe me if I told you." And so you remember my friend Steve? That's the guy I called. I called him April 7th, 2003. Could barely say, "Help." You know, that was the word. I could barely get it out of my mouth. Just help. You know, and he came, and he started taking me to meetings. And he took me to meetings, and I started going to the open door, and I wasn't feeling it. I was going to the Arid Club, which is long closed, and I wasn't feeling it. And they told me, "You know, the Grange has 6:30 a.m. mod meetings. You might like it there." And I went to the Grange. I went to the Grange, and there was, man, a bunch of people there that I knew. There was, because I'm a contractor. There's electricians and plumbers and framers. They're all hugging me, telling me, "Well, we've been waiting for you, Landy. We got, you know, so glad to see you." You know, and I had no idea why they were so happy for me. But a funny thing happened. I sat down by that. There was a little piano there, and there was a seat right by the door, so I could run out real quick in case I felt the need to leave. And I sat in that chair and went, and it was like, wow, where did that come from? Because I've been drinking for a long time and I get no ass. I didn't get no relief. You know, and that's when That's when Alcoholics Anonymous entered my life. And I knew that God had come and saved me, and I wanted to get sober. I didn't want to drink, but yet I wanted to drink. You know, because when we're new, we don't know that the 12 steps and a fellowship of people will save our lives. We don't know that. I surely didn't, and I wasn't about to believe it. But I stayed. You know, I haven't had a drink since that day. You know, I like to tell you, everything's been smooth and great. I stopped drinking, my life got great. But that wouldn't be, you know, that's not the truth. You know, I needed to get into that book, and I needed to work some steps. And when I started working steps, when I started looking that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable, I had to really do some work. You know, I wrote a big list out of all the stuff I was powerless over. And alcohol was only mentioned once. It was only one word. And then there was all these other words that I was powerless over. I was powerless over everything. And I had to, you know, I was able to look at how unmanageable the things that I was powerless over, how unmanageable it made my life. And so I did that first step, and then I worked the second step with this guy, Art. You know, he had been stalking me, and I finally asked him to be my sponsor. I didn't do this right away. I'm not that guy that, you know, the hardest four-letter word we can say around here is help, you know. And I finally got that. By the way, I want to say welcome to the newcomers. I forgot, but I'm glad you guys are here. I hope you find here what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, a new life. So when I did the second step and came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, you know, and I was like, I didn't really know what that was about. I knew there was a power. And I hadn't really realized how crazy I was, but I took that step the best of my ability, you know, and the third step was, you know, made a decision, you know, to turn my will and my life over the care of God as I understand God. And I had to give that a lot of thought. You know, first of all, we had to quit playing God, and that was, you know, I played God in sixth grade at Grace Lutheran School, you know, and I never stopped playing him. You know, they gave me that in the play one Christmas year, you know, and I hadn't realized that it had to be my way, and I was right, you know, and I'd rather be unhappy than right, and I want everything my way. And that was the big turning point when I had to realize that that third step needed to be in place so that I could just stop being in charge. And I did that step, and I did feel a lot of freedom. I felt a lot of relief. You know, my children started talking to me a little bit, and you know, I balked on the fourth step. I'm not going to tell you I didn't, but when I did it, you know, I did the columns. I did it the Joe and Charlie way. I wrote down in the first column who I was resentful for. In the second column, I wrote, you know, the resentment, what they had done to me. You know, and the third column, I wrote how it affected me and my self-esteem and my personal relationships, just like it says in the book, you know, just like it did in the book. And then that fourth column, you know, where was I to blame? How could I have done this differently? And that was an eye-opener. That was a giant eye-opener for me to really start taking apart for what had happened, you know, from my point of view. To actually get honest with myself for the very first time and look at that. And I was able to, you know, do the fourth step, do the fifth step, you know, and do a fear inventory, do a sex inventory. Very important. Don't miss that part in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because, you know, I needed to do that because, you know, like I was hearing about AA boy meets AA girl on AA campus. And, you know, don't get in a relationship for the first year. You know, I was like, I don't know, you know, I was like, okay. You know, I didn't do it, but nobody else did. I don't know if it works or not, because I never seen anybody else do it. You know, I've learned a lot from my defects of character. I mean, sometimes I like to do, let me rephrase that. Sometimes I do stuff, I act out on my defects because they haven't hurt me enough the first time. I need a little more pain to realize that that's a real defect of character. That's really harmful to myself and the people around me, others. And that sixth step, in the fifth column, I wrote all my defects down so that when I got to step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects. What defects? This whole list right here had a large list of defects. And then I, had to get, to humbly, remove my shortcomings, and get humble for the very first time in my life, because I know we all come in here with large, giant egos, First big book I bought was $6, and I gave the lady a 10 and told her, keep the change. She gave me $4. We don't do that here, because that's my ego. My ego is huge. I need the ego deflation, and Alcoholics Anonymous deflated it, and get some humility. A step, I made a list. I made a list of all people I'd harmed. And I went over that list with my sponsor before I went and made amends. I say, that's real important. Write that list and then go to your sponsor so I don't want to screw this up. I don't want to screw this up. Because it's a freedom step. That was just huge for me, because before, I made the direct amends, I did that A step, and there was a lot of people on that list that I didn't owe amends to, that I had just fabricated or thought I did. But there were some real serious ones. And I think the biggest thing that happened in the amends list was, to my wife. And the thing that saved me was that I had realized that she had made amends to me when she came back and saved my life. If it was a hallucination, it was my hallucination, and it was real, because it's kept me sober for 21 years, and I don't want to drink anymore. I have no desire at all to drink. So I know that she came back and saved me to make amends to me, and I made my amends to her, and I made my amends to my children, and the best that I could. I did the best I could. And a lot of the stuff's a living amends by just staying sober and not drinking again. I am not the guy that came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 2003. I'm not that guy. And I don't treat myself like that guy. I don't beat myself up anymore, because I forgave myself. I've forgiven myself because God entered my life. Alcoholics Anonymous entered my life. You people, this fellowship entered my life. You guys are my family. I mean, it's crazy, but I feel comfortable wherever I go. That step 10 says continue to take personal inventory. And when you're wrong, promptly admit it. Like, don't sit on it for like 3 years, 4 years. Well, I've already done a fourth step, But I'm not doing the deal. I need to promptly admit that stuff. And when I'm twisted and I feel something inside, I like to make that amends. I like to do that, I like to do that because that's what I've been taught to do here. Step 11, thought through prayer and meditation. That's the only step they told me that I could jump ahead of when I first got here. If you want to jump ahead to step 11, you can do that and pray and meditate, get a conscious contact with God. And today, I know that God came back and saved me. I know that I've had a ability to have that conscious contact with God. He's there with me all the time. I was talking to him before I came up here. He was like, hey, I'm going to need some more help. I can't do this alone. All my friends are here, but serious, it's, in the 12th step, of having had a spiritual awakening, I've had a spiritual awakening. I had one to get here, but that wouldn't have kept me here. I needed this fellowship. I needed these 12 steps. I needed, and to carry this message, I needed Joe. When he asked me that, we're on a mission, he's coming up on 19 years. He's like my son, it's like, you don't get that anywhere else. You don't get that stuff. There's some other guys in here that I like to work with. You know, they tell me to sponsor people. You know, when you guys raise your hand, raise your hand. Take somebody through this book. I mean, I've been a secretary, I've been a treasurer, I've been a speaker getter, I've been a greeter. I've done all that stuff. But I've never been rewarded so well by taking another man through the book and doing and working this thing. Because all my defects show up. The ones I missed show up. Everything shows up. And I have that ability to, feel useful, to get out of myself. Do something for somebody else, expecting nothing in return. You know, I always wanted, if I did something for you, you owed me. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that that's not how this works. And I see all you guys being the example of doing something for somebody else. Well, I came here, been here 3 or 4 times now, and I was like, I keep coming back. I enjoy that. I like that we're supposed to do something. And that's my biggest problem. If any of the statements that are I statements or me statements, I got problems because I'm thinking about myself. They told me early when I got here, if you're in a room thinking about your stuff, get out of the room. You're in there with a killer, you know? And now I realize that, you know, I'm selfish and self-centered and self-absorbed. It's all about me. And you guys taught me that it's not. It's about you. You know, if I can get nothing in return, and I'm so happy. But so I made amends with my mother. And I was there for her for a long time. She died in 2015. But I was able to take care of her and get her into, she had dementia we had to move her to Emeritus in Bakersfield, and I'd go every Sunday and take her to church and sit with her, and she thought she was at the restaurant still, and these people that, because they played music, were at her piano bar, and she was happy, you know? And I was with her when she became, you know, unresponsive. And she drank up to 92 and a half. They called me. I was heading for a swap meet, and they called me and said, your mom's in ICU. She's unresponsive. They moved her from Emeritus, you know, and I went there. And the doctor was examining her and everything. He says, he looked at me and says, your mother's under the influence of alcohol. I said, yeah, I'd be surprised if she wasn't, you know, because that's what I've learned. It's okay. But we took her back to her room and stayed with her. And the hospice people came and the minister came. And, you know, I held her hand and the minister told me, you know, she can hear you, so it's okay to talk to her. You know, so I talked to her and I was there. She died April 8th. My sobriety date's April 7th. So I'm sitting with my mom and... it's the 7th of April, and my sister's there, and she says, are you going to go to Tehachapi and take a cake tonight? I said, no, I'm staying with Mom. Well, the hospice nurse and the minister knew that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 12 years sober then. They said, I think she's going to wait. She's going to wait. So I left. I went to Tehachapi, and I took a cake. And then at 5 o'clock the next morning, I went back, and at noon, she passed. And when she passed, I was holding her hand, and I watched her go into complete peace. You know, I could have not been there. I could have still been resentful, you know, being angry at her for something that I had done. And so that brought me a lot of peace. I went that night to the men's stag and took another cake. It was a Wednesday. You know, it was April 8th, Wednesday. 2015, and I went to the AV Men's Stag. I didn't go to the bar. I didn't go drink. I went to a meeting because I'm alcoholic. You know, that's what we do. That's what we do here. I'm not cured. I get a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And if I'm doing something right, then I get that relief. I get that spiritual thing. You know, and then I retired in 2014 and. My mother-in-law got really sick, and this was my wife's mom, and I took care of her. Took care of her. Chuck came and helped me clean the house, and we did stuff, you know, but I took care of my mother-in-law. She lived to be 98 years old, you know, and I took care of her, And when she passed, I took care of all the arrangements. I did all of that. And when I laid her to rest that day, the whole thing made sense. It was like, oh, the wife saves me. I'm here for her mother. And the preacher was there, and he's like, you know, because everyone's like, I was going to leave town. I was going to go retire. And so I said, I got to take care of my mother-in-law. So are you taking care of your mom? I said, no, my mother-in-law. I wouldn't take care of my mother-in-law before Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it made the whole thing come full circle that I really realized that I could be there for somebody else. And I get the rewards, you know. I kicked and screamed a little bit a few times, but, you know, afterwards when the real message came through that was my purpose, that's what I'm here for somebody, to do something for somebody else. You know, that's, and so I left last summer and I bought some acreage in White Sulphur Springs, Montana, and I'm building a house in the woods in the middle of nowhere, me and God, just back there with just total peace and serenity. And it's like, and I'm Zooming with the guys on Wednesday night, but I need a meeting, you know? So I drive 50 miles to Wilsaw, Montana, to the Lutheran church, and I find 13 alcoholics in the back room, you know? And I'm 21 years sober, and I'm the baby, you know? And I sat down in that chair, and I went, ah! And I was back there. And then they took, you know, I met all these wonderful, loving people in Alcoholics Anonymous. They invited me to this big picnic, and we're sitting there looking at the crazy mountain range. There's about 20 alcoholics, some Al-Anons. We're barbecuing, throwing the frisbee around, just having a good time. And, you know, that's all from God, you know. You know, I'm not alone when I'm with, you know, that's why I say this is my family, you know. I don't miss drinking. Nobody from the bar has called me in 21 years and said, hey, Landy, how you doing? We miss you. I was sitting in the bar, and when I got up and walked off that stool, they all just slid over one and just kept on going. They didn't miss me. You know, when I don't show up at a meeting and people aren't there, people call. People call. You okay? You know, yeah, I'm over here, I'm over there. You know, I'm doing stuff. But I find, you know, if I can stay out of myself, do something for somebody else, stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I love Alcoholics Anonymous, it's my life. It's what I do. I wrench on motorcycles in the daytime. I go to AA. God gave me a new car. I got people in the car. We're driving all over the place. We're all over the valley going to meetings. And that's what I'm supposed to do. And when I get, you know, when I get back there, I'm going back in May. You know, my friends that I met there, they're texting, happy holidays, been looking forward to seeing you. You know, I met a lot of nice, loving people. And I learned how to be a service outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I can help the neighbors. I did some grading work for the neighbors. Let me pay you. I was like, no, I've already been paid. But he don't understand that. I've been paid in full a long time ago. I'm overpaid in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've been overpaid. And I never thought that I sat close to the door at the Grange at 6:30 in the morning. I'm ready to run out the door. You know? And I heard this one guy say, I'm so glad I made it past the liquor store this morning. I didn't have to take a drink. And that's the guy I went and talked to after the meeting, because I was thinking of stopping at the bar. You know? I'm not a liquor store guy, I'm a bar guy. And that's the kind of stuff that I would have never thought. I just would have never thought. You know, but when I take a drink, that, you know, now I have some friends that drink, okay? They have a cold beer on a hot day. They have a glass of wine after dinner. You know, a little sake with their sushi. And I don't drink like that. I don't drink like that. You give me a cold beer on a hot day, I got to go get an 18-pack. And while I'm there, I'm also get a half gallon of vodka. And then we might have to stop by down on the corner and see that other guy. Let me see that guy, because you know, I can drink a lot more after seeing the other guy. You know, and that stuff's not bad for me because it enhances my drinking. I can drink more. You know, that's the kind of stuff that and I realized that today. I went with some guys, we rode up to the McNally's and we're on bikes. And they all had a shot and I said, here it goes. And they all had one shot for Marty's birthday. That was it. One shot. You know, they had a bottle that they'd brought up to the cabin, that they'd brought up, and I think they each had a shot there before they went to McNally's. And then in the morning, I saw Dave with the bottle. It's over half full, and they're putting it in the saddlebags. I said, you know, that's an open container. They're like, huh? You know, I mean, I don't, when I take a, you know, I throw the top off, and we drink. You know, and I know the difference today. I know the alcoholism. I know that I have an allergy. You know, I know that I can't stop when I start. That's why I'm not saying, it'll be different this time. I'll just have one. I never had one before. You know, I don't want to live in denial. And I don't want to live in the fact that I'm a functioning alcoholic. Because my kids hated my guts. My wife was dead. My secretary was stealing me blind from the inside of my office, and my one guy in the field was stealing me blind. But I'm figuring my life's, you know, I'm in denial. You know, me and my ego, it keeps me going. I know that today, you know, today I have friends. Today I don't have to drink. Today I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink. And believe me, I've had some problems. But I've had some blessings. You know, I've had so many blessings. I'm a very, very blessed man. I've worked hard all my life and partied hard. But my life just changed when I got to AA. We had a meeting last night, and there was just eight of us. And we've all been in AA for a while, all of us. And we're just sitting there, a little intimate meeting where we're all sitting there going, no stress. We're not tripping over the holidays. You know, I don't have to worry about getting drunk this Christmas. I don't have to worry about the sobriety checkpoint. You know, I don't have to worry about that stuff today. I get this, I get a daily reprieve, and I know that. But I'm very grateful that you guys, I wish everybody really happy holidays. Most of all, I wish the new guys the best. You know, whether you're here because you want to or not, or on a report card, it don't matter that you're here. You know, and if you can, you know, stick around after the meeting and talk to somebody, get some phone numbers. You know, I was willing to go to any length when I got here, reluctantly. I got to be honest about that, but I was. And so I wish you guys the best because you know I didn't understand why the old timers were still at the meeting at the AM meeting. I didn't know why they were still there. Why didn't they get well and go home? What were they doing here? How long does this AA thing take? Guy's got 30 years, you know? But I found that why he's here. He's here to give something to you because you guys are the most important person in this room because that's how Alcoholics Anonymous stays growing. We get newcomers. Some of us go out. Some of us don't. You know, I'm on my fifth sponsor in 21 years. Two of them have went out. One had 29 years, you know. But he started saying stuff like, this program's designed to work on the bricks. And I said, what page is that on? Because I hadn't seen him in meetings for a long time, you know. But he saved my life. And when he stopped giving it away, he lost his. You know, that's what this is about, so... Thank you for asking me to come out and share.